gives Satan an advantage, but because you're unforgiving, he puts that into your mind, you'll do other things. For instance, people have kept score, they've saved things up, and they've split a church over something like this, and then stumbling weaker brethren, then they've sinned against the Christ, causes difficulties, or sometimes in families, children against parents, or parents against each other. They save up these unforgiving things, and eventually they do something that is different than the unforgiving. It doesn't come straight across. So far, lying is the only one that comes straight across. Now we're going to come to one that comes straight across. Satan puts it into the mind to steal. Stealing, taking something that doesn't belong to you. And this comes straight across by stealing. So lying and stealing are the only ones that you'll really just come right straight across. Unforgivingness can take all sorts of pride, cowardice, doubt, all sorts of different areas. Now, in the fourth chapter of Ephesians, you have a mixed group of admonitions from Paul here, and so we have to be very careful. And as you notice in the 26th verse, you have one of the things that could be of the flesh. And so he says, be angry. Now, he doesn't say a Christian should never get angry. Christ got angry. The same word is used of Christ. He got angry. But he didn't let something come in alongside of that anger. Now, actually, the next word is the word for anger with the preposition para, or alongside of. He lets something come in alongside of that anger, and thus sin. And so he says, be angry and don't sin. Let not the sun go down on your wrath. And so it's changed. It becomes something else, you see. He adds something alongside of it before it becomes sin. And while it doesn't spell it out, you pop a guy in the gourd because you're angry. That's adding something alongside the anger, you see. And so that would be sin. And so he says, be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on that coming alongside of your wrath. Then he says, neither. Now you have a negative disjunctive here. Neither give place to the devil. Now he's going to tell us then some of the things that would give place to the devil. So let him that stole stop stealing. And this was in a community where there were many, many slaves. And you remember the little book of Philemon. In the book of Philemon, a slave stole something from his master and fled. So it was a kind of a common occurrence in the Roman Empire for slaves to steal things. And so he says, let him that stole stop stealing. Now, if he steals, then obviously they're giving place to the devil. And instead of stealing, they're to labor with their hands that which is good so that they'll have to give to somebody else. You see, the correction here is instead of taking something that doesn't belong, give something. And we'll see that, of course, when we put on the armor, that's exactly what's involved, is replacing the thoughts that Satan puts in your mind with thoughts that God has from his word. All right, then he says, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace to the hearers. And so you have here two things that Satan causes. He's the one behind corrupt speech. Now, this corrupt speech isn't all of the cursing you hear. This is a special kind. This is words that are made rotten at the core when they ordinarily or originally were not rotten at the core. This is the word sapros. We get our word sap from it. And when a tree gets rotten at the heart, where the sap goes up, well, then it's rotten where everything that's important is. So this is using words that become rotten in their meaning when originally they weren't intended in that way. And we have a whole, well, I've had to learn about three vocabularies. My kids go to school and they pick up the in sayings, and the funny part of it was, when the older one finally got up here, the younger one, they were coming back to what the older one had. And it's a repeat. Everybody thinks they're new and they're hep and they got new stuff and it's all heavy and all that stuff. But it's just a repeat of what everybody's gone through. And so it's a sample of that. So this is part of it. Now, we can look down, if they look at the 31st verse, bitterness. Bitterness. And it's in this same context dealing with Satan. Now, there's a lot of verses showing that bitterness comes from Satan. And, well, again, we can look at Job, if you want to look back there, and you can see that Satan attacked Job, and he became bitter. He said he was bitter. This is in Job 10:1. And so bitterness comes from Satan, stealing from Satan, a corrupt communication from Satan. Job 10:1. And remember, Job's under an attack of Satan all through this book until you get to the 40th chapter. He's under an attack of Satan. And so anything that's adverse here, you have the problem. So he says, "My soul is weary of my life. I'll leave my complaints on myself. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul." Now, Satan caused that bitterness. We saw it in Ephesians 4. You have it again in Acts 8:23, where there's a man who, it'll never happen again in history, he got saved about a week before the Holy Spirit was given to any believers at this point. These were Samaritans. And so he had no prevention or protection during that early part of his Christian life. And at that time, Satan made him bitter. And in the 8th chapter of Acts, the 23rd verse, and you have him, let's see, where does it connect to Satan? It's, in the 7th verse, you have unclean spirits. And this man in his past life had been a wizard or a sorcerer or a magician, and so he, in the 23rd verse, Satan attacked him with this attack of bitterness before he could receive the Holy Spirit. "For I perceive that thou art in the gall of bitterness and in the bond of lawlessness." And so you have bitterness with that. In Hebrews 12:15, you have bitterness again. And again, bitterness in and of itself is not sin. It's what you do as a result of it. And it'll come across as something else when it becomes sin. So Hebrews 12:15, you have again bitterness. "Look diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled." Now, two sections of Scripture link that bitterness to Satan. Ephesians 4 and in Job 10:1. And so bitterness is not apropos for a Christian. Christ was never bitter. He took all of his circumstances and accepted them without bitterness. And when you look at your circumstances, and it'll always be circumstance, perhaps persons, with bitterness, it's because Satan has put that in your mind. And you're going to do something drastic as a result of it if you let that bitterness control you. You can't just be bitter all day long and go normally, merrily on your way as though nothing is wrong. It's impossible. And so you will do something along that line. Now you have, I'm going rapidly, if there's any questions of how we link them or how they're involved, well, be sure and raise your hand. I'm trying to get through this because we're a little behind. All right, now, laziness in spiritual things. We're not talking about down south of the border where they take a siesta every afternoon because it's so hot and the unsaved and saved do it. This is laziness in spiritual things. And reference to what a Christian should do. Now, in 1 Timothy 5, you have three things together there. There would be laziness, you're going to have tail-bearing, and busybody. And these are all satanic, and they can all cause troubles. Now, tail-bearing in and of itself is not a sin, but boy, has it caused troubles. Has it caused troubles, you know? Especially when there's tail-bearers that are doing it in a sanctimonious way. "Well, I wish you'd pray for so-and-so." You know they're doing... But just say pray for them and drop it. The Lord knows all about it. You don't have to fill him in on the gossip, you see. And so tail-bearing and busybody, sticking your nose in other people's business when it doesn't belong to you. It's not your right. There are areas of a privacy that a Christian has that's just none of your business. And those that are busybodies, they stick their nose in there. Now, this, interestingly enough, this section is dealing with young widow women. It's not that they're the only ones guilty, but in this particular epistle at Ephesus, they were the ones that were guilty. And so Paul is writing there, and this tells you it's from Satan. Now, if it's from Satan, he doesn't pick just on young widow women. He picks on everybody, but in this occasion, there were some young widows, and they were especially targets of Satan because of their idle time, their time that they had. So it starts with the 11th verse. It says, but the younger widows refuse. We don't accept them into the church membership. Now, this was at Ephesus because of a particular problem they had at Ephesus. Remember, this was one of the two places where they had those temples that were actually temples of immorality. This one was to Aphrodite or to Venus, the goddess of love. And then over in Corinth, you had the temple virgins, 1,000 of them, and they were anything but what it said. And so you did have problems at those two cities you didn't have at other cities. And so he says, younger widows refuse. Don't accept them on the church roll. But when they, now he's going to tell you why. For when they have begun to wax wanton against the Christ. Now what he's saying in simple terms here is that because these are widow women, they will have a sexual drive that they'll try to satisfy in the realm of the Christ, making their relationship in the realm of the body one where they can satisfy that. And he says, they will marry, having condemnation because they've cast off the first object of their faith. Now, they haven't given up Christianity and become unbelievers, but they've lost the first object of their faith, which is to be Christ, you see, because of this other aspect. And so he says, with all, they learn to be idle. Now notice that something had to be learned. It isn't that they were initially lazy. They learned to be idle. Now why? Well, we're going to see as it gets down, it's going to tie it to Satan twice. They learned to be idle. And not only idle, but tattlers. Now that's tale-bearing. And busybodies, speaking things that they ought not. I determine, therefore, that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the home, give none occasion to the adversary, that's Satan, to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside after Satan. Some have already learned to be idle. Some have already learned to be tattlers and busybodies. You see? So you have that twice Satan is mentioned. The adversary there is Satan, and then Satan is Satan. So he's linked to this twice. There's three things there then. This is laziness in spiritual things. Something they had to learn. Apparently these widows had had a proper attitude of faith prior. You see, they'd given it up. They knew how to direct faith. They'd given it up. They learned something else. You see? But it was the adversary that taught them that. Whenever you learn something, you have to have a teacher, whether it's circumstances, a person, a book. You have to have a teacher when you learn. You don't learn without a teacher. Being a book, circumstances, TV today, they didn't have it. Now, you don't always learn the right things. Here, they didn't learn the right things. But they had a teacher, and that was Satan. So you have it linked with Satan, you see it? So laziness in spiritual things. I've known men in the pastorate that were balls of fire. They were workaholics in every area except the area they should be. In studying the Word, ministering the Word. Oh, they'd go out and build buildings like mad. Sure, you put them on a church building, they work from sunup to sundown. But to get their sermon, 10 o'clock Saturday night, that's laziness in spiritual things. Oh, and that's not very unusual. It's the normal. That's laziness in spiritual things. That's one of them. So you're going to do a job interview. You'd wait until 7 o'clock the morning you're going to go to get all your stuff together. Just plain laziness, you see. Now again, it doesn't come across directly as sin, but it sure can lead one into sin and cause others to sin. And so that's the difficulty. Now, if you look at this list, this is a list that probably you could have every one of these things and be accepted in society because they're not crass, immoral, objectionable things. But this is what Satan does. Now, we've seen Satan behind every one of those verses, remember? In Job, he's behind 40 chapters. So you don't have to point out he's there all the time. He is. And so Satan's behind. This is what Satan does. But these things will trip you up and make you carnal just as much as immorality. I want to emphasize that because Christians have their pet sins and they think they're the only things that'll make you unacceptable to God in the realm of fellowship and service. Some think it's divorce, some think it's immorality, some think it's drunkenness, some think it's murder. But you know, if you look at the Ten Commandments when God wrote them, they're all way down the list. The most important thing to God was your relationship to God. And so the first four commandments dealt with your relationship to God. Now, if we'd write them, we'd probably write the other commandments first, you know. But that's the way God wrote them, because that was the way they were important. And so these are the things Satan does. Now, do you see they're so subtle? Most Christians act independent of God. And most Christians get discouraged and disappointed and doubt and have pride and are unforgiving and are lazy in spiritual things. You can prove that if there's a big ball game going and you have to drive 50 miles to get there and on Sunday, many church members will go there. But they're too tired to come to church, you know. Well, you can do anything you want to do if you want hard enough. And so this shows it's one of the ways of testing whether it's spiritual laziness. Now, it's obvious that wasn't physical laziness, you see. It's something they had to learn. It's something that Satan caused them to learn. And so here you have the satanic principles. Now, it's interesting because these things aren't really counted bad by most Christians. Acting independent God. Tail-bearing, it's okay if you don't get caught and don't do too much of it. Especially if you're on the receiving end, you like to hear the scuttlebutt, you know. being disappointed, griping, doubting. Sure, nobody can be strong in faith all the time, you know. You hear that? These are things, out of one thing, they probably look at lying and stealing, you think? But they're no more sanctified or unsanctified than what the rest of the things Satan does. Now, you have this problem then. Now, when any of these lusts come your way, Satan is going to have an advantage. That's the important thing. You're giving a place to him, a foothold. That word is a military term, that word, give a place to him. It's when, we got a place on the shores of France on D-Day. We landed there. We bivouacked there. That was a place. That's the military term. He's on your soil, ready to fight you now. You see? That's what it means, give place to the devil, over in Ephesians 4. Or he gains an advantage over us. Well, obviously, you're at a disadvantage then. And so, since all these things are put into your mind, do you notice every one of these things are thoughts? You have to think to be lazy and spiritual, think, oh, I don't have to do it today, I can put that off till then, you know. I'm sure that that's what these pastors wait till 10 o'clock Saturday night to get their message. And I've known a dozen of them that have told me that. I knew one pastor, he was 4 miles from me when I was down in Junction City. He got his message 10 o'clock Saturday night, and he got so nervous by it that he used to, then Sunday night, he'd read comic books to calm down. He told me that. I tried to sell a guy an interlinear Greek testament, trying to help him out. He wouldn't buy it. He said it wouldn't be any use to him. And I tried to help him, but it wouldn't help. All right, so these are the things. Now, our defenses against this. These are all mental things. They all start with your mind. Satan puts them in your thinking. And you're going to have to dislodge that type of thinking. That's mainly what your defense against Satan is. That's mainly what your defense against the flesh is. It's going to put a lust. And remember what a lust is. It's in your mind. And if it's a bad lust, it's a bad thought. And you're going to have to dislodge it with the right kind of thought. Not any thought. Now, people will go to Philippians 4 not understanding what the previous context is told about and say, think on these things. No, it doesn't even say that in the Greek. It says, be logical about these things. Gizomai. All right? Then it uses some first-class conditions. Since there are things to make you happy. Translate that good. All right, so what do you do when Satan puts one of these thoughts in your mind? It becomes a lust. It will, if you let it lodge there. You take and keep it there. You try to think about it. You say, sure, I've got a right to gripe. Look at what I've got. Then you're going to be discouraged. You're going to be disappointed. And eventually you're going to doubt. And then eventually you're going to do something doubting. And it'll be entirely different than what I would do doubting. So you can't name it. It's just anything you do doubting. But you see how that leaves an open field for Satan? Like once he gets you to that place, anything you do, he's got you. So it becomes a very important thing to know. Now, what are our defenses against Satan? Well, you have it hinted at in one of the earliest epistles of the New Testament, but it's not spelled out. But we want to look at it because James knew a lot more than some people think, and yet he didn't know as much as others think. He was early in Christianity. He was writing about the 15th chapter of Acts when a lot of doctrine hadn't been given to men by revelation yet. But he did know you had three enemies. I want you to see the fourth chapter of James. He did know you had three enemies. He knew more than the average Christian today. Most Christians today, if you talk to the average Christian, think Satan does everything that's bad. That's right. It's so discouraging, you talk to most Christians. Satan does everything that's bad. He causes immorality and drunkenness and everything. And nothing to them, you see. They're scot-free. They're clean as a whistle. But that's not true. Now, in James 4, if you'll notice, in the first few verses, he talks about the flesh and the lust of the flesh, you see. He talks about the flesh and the lust of the flesh. And you'll notice in the fourth verse, he talks about the cosmos system. And if you make your friend, you befriend the cosmos system, this would be a carnal Christian, and befriend the cosmos system, you make yourself an enemy of God. You make yourself an enemy of God. Now, God doesn't become your enemy just because you count him that way. And many couples have acted like the other couple's an enemy, and the person didn't count themselves. So, yeah, the same way here, you see. So he says, now he's going to talk about Satan. So you have all three enemies. The lusts, where comes the lust? Don't they come from the lusts that war in your members? You lust, and you have not. You don't ask right, so forth, and then the world. Now down in the seventh verse, he brings in Satan. So he has all three of your enemies in seven verses. And a very good summary for the amount of revelation James had. At this point in time, he did a terrific job. Don't sell him short. His writing before Paul had given all the revelation that comes. But with what he had, he did a terrific job. Now notice what he says in the seventh verse. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Now this word submit, I think is translated correctly. Some places they translate it subject. This word submit means to put yourself at the disposal of another to receive whatever benefits they want to give you. Now, James doesn't tell us what benefits God wants to give. We're going to have to wait for Paul to tell us. Submit yourselves to God and resist the devil, and he'll flee from you. Now, he doesn't tell us how to resist the devil, but he tells us we're going to have to resist the devil after we've submitted ourselves to God. Now, many Christians get fouled up. The big deal today is if you fight Satan, onward Christian soldiers, fight Satan and you'll win. Ah, you lose. You missed the most important step. Submit yourself to God first. Then you have those mystic Christians, they submit themselves to God, and they won't resist Satan. And they get kicked in the teeth too. They get kicked in the teeth too. Because James didn't say, submit to God and you'll beat Satan. And he didn't say, resist Satan and you'll beat Satan. He said, submit yourselves to God and resist Satan. And then Satan will scram. He'll flee. So it's both, you see. All right, now, Peter tells us another step a little closer that connects with what we want to connect. If you look at 1 Peter 5, and he's going to tell you to resist too. But he isn't going to tell you to submit because he's already told you in his prior context, if you're in the right spiritual condition, you've already submitted. And if you're sober, you're thinking seriously of this enemy. And if you're vigilant, why, you'd have to be in the right spiritual relationship. And so he doesn't use the word submit, but his first four chapters tells you if you do all those things, then you are submissive to God, and you are strengthened in the inner man, and you can resist Satan. So he says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, like a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may overwhelm, and he does that to make you fearful, a coward. Then it says, whom resist steadfastly in the faith. Now notice, it's not talking about your individual faith. It's talking about a body of doctrine that tells you how to resist Satan. A body of doctrine. Now Peter is writing the first epistle when Paul is in prison in Rome, probably the second imprisonment, and the epistle that Paul wrote with that body of doctrine has already been circulated. And so he knows about it. He tells you in his second epistle, he's read a lot of Paul's epistles. And he's writing that late. And so if you have your date of probably 60, your Schofield says, I'd say about 62 for 1 Peter. And if you look at the date on Ephesians that Schofield gives you, you'll see that there's about... he gives you 64 there. That's because he didn't hold to two imprisonments. And so it should be earlier than that. Two imprisonments. All right? So Peter is telling you there's a body of doctrine. Now if you turn back to Ephesians 6, you have that body of doctrine. It tells you how to resist Satan. And again, it's going to be all mental. And I don't know any commentator that tells you that. When I tell you to put on something you can't see, it's undefinable, nobody knows where it is, you're going to have to put it on mentally. And there's some armor here, but it's not armor. You put it on mentally because Satan. Now, you'll notice the 10th verse tells you how you submit to the Lord. And it's a very important verse because he says, finally, my brethren, be endued with power by your position in the Lord and by an endowment of strength from Him. And so you're to have this strengthening from the Lord, this empowering from the Lord before you put on the armor to resist Satan. That's what James was talking about, this submission. So if you look at 6:10, and there are three words, by the way, there, of the four words for strength or power. And here you have kratos, which is the manifest might. So he says, and then you have en dunamis, and then you have ischios. So there's three words for power there. They emphasize different things. And so he says, be empowered by your position in the Lord, and by, I translate that, by the manifest might of an endowment of strength from Him. You're going to be doubly strong, you see. You're going to be strong because of your empowered, because of your position in the Lord, and because you are in your position in the Lord, He's going to give you an endowment of strength. That's true. You live in your position in the Lord. That's a strong place because you're strong in the grace that's in Christ Jesus. 2 Timothy 2:1. And then on top of that, because you're in the right place, God strengthens you. That's the whole point. Now that's how you submit to the Lord. That's what He wants to give you. He wants to give you strength. After all, you're going to fight a very powerful enemy. What do you need? You need strength. So when you submit to the Lord, He's going to give you that which is advantageous to you. Strength. All right? So you don't try to put on the armor until you have the 10th verse. 10th verse starts this. Now he says, put on the whole armor. Not just pieces of it. But you have to put it on piece by piece. Go down to an antique shop and buy a piece of stove pipe and stuff that is a nice war if you want to do that. But that's not going to help you much with Satan. He's inside your head with a thought. Now, he's not there. He puts a thought there. He can't inhabit you. All right? And so, this armor is purely a mental thing. But you notice you must put on the whole. The reason for it, you can put on the piece of armor that blocks the attack that he's doing at that moment. He can shift it. If you don't keep putting on the whole armor, he can get you where you haven't put on the armor. You see? All right, so put on the whole armor of God. Now, I would translate that from God. You see, it's the armor from God. It isn't God's armor. God doesn't need any armor. And so it's an armor from God. And you put on the whole armor from God. God provides it. It's here. All right? Now, if you put on the whole armor, that you may be able to stand against, withstand, stand against, resist again, the wiles. Now, that word wiles isn't quite accurate. It's the word for methods, methodology. It would be a better translation, the methodology. The methods that Satan uses, all the methods he uses, you see, not his wiles. It's his methods. He's working you over. He's using methods. And it's methodios is the Greek word. Methodology would be a good translation of it. So you stand against the different methods Satan used. Here's the methods he used, right here. You stand against those methods. Right? Not wiles. It's strange how when you've come to these sections dealing with Satan, these Anglicans of 1611, they were Anglicans, Church of England men. They show a superstition sort of towards Satan, and they translate words very different than you really should translate them. Well, that 2 Corinthians 2:11, where really the things of the working of the mind from him, and there they use what, some craftiness or some silly thing like that, you know, about fiddle. I don't care if a guy's crafty. I want to know how he affects me. And that's what the verse tells you. All right? And so this tells you the methods of the devil. So you can stand against it, but you've got to put on the whole armor. But you only put it on piece by piece, and you put it on in the order that God tells you to put it on here. But remember, keep in mind what James has said and what Peter said. You be sober-minded first. Serious. Take this thing serious. It's not a funny paper thing. It's not a thrilling adventure. It's a very serious thing. Sober, vigilant, alert, and dependent and submissive and standing in God's power. Now, you'll get this page next time. I didn't get it printed up. We're starting a new page. Now, there's some things you should know about Satan before you start this armor, and because you're going to see it in the context. Satan can't be everywhere, and he doesn't always give you individual attention. But when he sends a demon to do it, the demon will use the same methods Satan uses, because he has Satan's authority and Satan's power, you see. So Satan is not omnipresent. He's not omniscient either. He can't read your mind. But he can pretty well tell by your actions what you're thinking. My wife does this to me all the time. She's not Satan. We've lived together 42 years, 43 years now. And she can pretty well tell what I'm thinking. She tells me, yeah, that's right. You know, I can't get away with anything. Not that I try, but I can't. All right. And if Satan's had 6,000 years to watch human beings, and he can pretty well tell what they're thinking by your gestures, the way you act. I can tell whether you're happy. I'm not very smart, but I can tell whether you're happy or sad or you're envious. You see? Whether you're thrilled. And Satan can do it far better, because he's the smartest thing that was ever created in the universe. And so he's not omniscient. He can't read your mind. He's not omnipresent. He can't be everywhere. But he's almost omnipresent in that he has henchmen out with instant communication. He can tell a demon over in India to attack a guy, a demon in Alaska, and a demon down in South America instantaneously. And they will use the same methodology as Satan. Now you can see that by the 12th verse. You see, in the 11th verse, you're standing against the methodology of the devil, one individual spirit being the devil. But in the 12th verse, it's saying you're wrestling against demons, minor spirit beings. That's because they're under his authority and they can use his methodology. Now, let me show you. He can even do that with a human being eventually. If you look over at Revelation 13, it tells you something, I hope you have a margin, because In the second verse, it says Satan is going to give to this first beast of Revelation 13, who's a man, is going to give him his power and his throne and great authority. Now you see, when he gives this man his power and his throne and great authority, this man's going to become a world ruler, and he's going to be able to do three kinds of miracles. He's going to do everything because Satan's giving him his power, so he can do what Satan could do, you see. Except he can't probably become invisible like Satan is. All right. But Satan can delegate his authority and delegate his power, and others can do what Satan himself would do. All right, now that's what Ephesians 6 is talking about. It says in the 11th verse, we're going to withstand, stand against, resist the methodology of the devil. But in doing that, you may have to wrestle with one of his subordinates. Now again, this wrestling is mental, and you can see that. You can see it. Here's where it sets the pace, that the whole thing is mental. Because how are you going to wrestle against the spirit you don't see? And it tells you here these things are not physical. They're not flesh and blood. If they're not flesh and blood, they're not physical. And how can you wrestle against an invisible thing that you can't even feel? It has to be mental, you see. It's a mental wrestling. Oh, I know the term here was used for the Olympic Games when they actually physically wrestle. Oh, that's all right. It tells you here you're not wrestling in the Olympics. In the Olympics, they're physical. They're flesh and blood. Two flesh and blood big old behemoths get up there and wrestle. All right? And when they throw an arm lock on a guy, it's an arm lock. And a headlock is a headlock. There's a head there. And this is just using the term to tell you how this is a real wrestling match, though it's mental. Now, you use it the same way. I heard it of Einstein one time when he was back east, and he was at Princeton, and said he wrestled with this problem. Well, you don't picture him writing a problem down on paper and getting the paper down and wrestling with the paper. No, he wrestled with the problem right up here. Right up there. You see? Now that's how this wrestling match is. Notice, if we wrestle against a principality or a power, or one of these principality powers that's the ruler of the darkness of this cosmos system, or against any one of these wicked spirits in the heavenlies, we're wrestling against Satan's methodology. Alright? So it doesn't matter if you're getting personal attention from Satan or not. In fact, very few people in the Bible got personal attention from Satan. Judas Iscariot did, Job did, Peter did, and a few others did, but most of the others that were hindered by Satan, it was done by a demonic being or an inferior, subordinate helper of Satan. You see? But it hurts you just as bad. Hurts you just as bad. Now, how do you wrestle? Well, it must be the same as putting on the whole armor, right? And mentally, you wrestle putting on the armor. And when you wrestle putting on the armor, you're standing against one of these demons. And that's how you wrestle them. And notice something else. You can't wrestle with them until they come to you. Because really, that 12th verse, it says they live in the second heaven. And so you have to wait until they come to you. So you're not marching around onward, Christian soldiers marching us to war. That is a bunch of amillennial nonsense. Postmillennial, it really was. We're going to win the world for Christ, and then he'll come back and take it. All right. So you see that this wrestling must be the mental wrestling you have in putting on the armor. And it's hard because you've got to stick right to it. You've got to let nothing deter you mentally, and that's more difficult sometimes than changing or deterring physical activity. All right, and so we wrestle. We wrestle how? By mentally putting on these parts of the armor that actually resist Satan, resists his methods, resists a demon if a demon's doing it. And so we wrestle mentally by putting on the armor. And it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy. It becomes easier. If you do it 1,000 times, it becomes very easy. But then you have the problem. I know a Christian that's done, and they get sloppy. Yeah. Hurried. Think they do it. And they don't. Well, they put on the armor like a kid that's gotten up late to go to school, and he gets dressed for school, you know. shoes are on the wrong feet, different colored socks are wrong, all that stuff. Well, I've actually seen kids with different colored socks. In fact, I did it one time. I got up real early in the morning and go to some meeting that I didn't want to wake up my wife, so I didn't turn on the light to get dressed. And I thought I had everything laid out right. And there were two pairs of socks laying there, and I didn't realize it, and I took one of them, one of them, and the other. I got up there, and sitting on the platform, looked down, I got two different color socks. So, boy, I just made sure my pants leg were real pulled down there. The only other silly thing I did one time, I was interim pastor at the church in Salem. My son is now pastoring, and we were staying up in Portland. And kids got a little late, and we had to hustle them on. I forgot to put on a tie. Got almost church, my wife looked at me, no tie. My son had a tie, so I borrowed his tie. That's the only two I really had. Okay. So I'm not quite absent-minded yet. Now, the reason I tell you this is because it is possible that after you get used to putting on the armor, that you get sloppy, and then you're going to get sunk too. And I know a Christian said he can put it on in 20 seconds. Well, I've got news for him. He should have spent the 20 seconds on the first part of the armor and stayed there a while until he made sure Satan had moved off to another place. All right, now let's look at the armor because, again, he tells you, warns you in the 13th verse. Notice the wherefore, going back to the verse before, explaining. If you look, it's interesting because in the 12th verse, you really have a hate, which should be translated because, and as telling you why you need the whole armor of God to resist the methodology of the devil, because we wrestle not. It shouldn't be for there. It's hati, not ni. And then you have down in the 13th verse, through this, or because of this, a diatuto, because of this, because, and that would be summarizing, because of your wrestling against these things in the 12th verse, because of this, you're to take the whole armor of God. And notice again, it says the whole armor. Now, the reason for it, you're going to see sometimes. You're going to put on the first section or the second section, and for a moment, Satan will cease attacking. Your mind will clear up. That lust will be gone. And then you're going to take your attention somewhere else, and then Satan will shoot a fiery dart and get you another place. You see, you've got to go the whole armor. And I've found occasions where sometimes you have to go back and put it on again. Not often. Usually when you put on the whole armor, by the time you get to the last piece, if you take your time and are sure that Satan has no longer probing that area, usually he's gone. But there are occasions, like with Job, you know, he stayed around a while. And that's why you've got to be sober and vigilant. You've got to know whether Satan is probing that area of your mind, if there's any more of those problems around. And that's why you must know the lust that comes from Satan. All right, now, you put on the whole armor. Twice it's emphasized in the middle voice a couple times. And you do it for yourself. God isn't going to slap you with the armor. And that's why it's the armor from God, but you must put it on. And you'll notice in the 13th verse, again, you have a grammatical connection with the prior context with an therefore. It should be therefore, not wherefore. In the 13th verse, diatuto, it's the 14th verse you have therefore. Therefore, and they translate it correctly. All right, because of this, take unto you the whole armor of God, the whole armor from God, provided by God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. Now, the evil day here is the period in which Satan is attacking you. And it shows that he doesn't attack constantly. It's not an incessant thing. It isn't all your life. It isn't every day of your life. The evil day when Satan, when you have to resist him, when you have to stand against him, it's a day lacking in character. It's evil because the day lacks in character. The event's something in it. And it proves that it's not your whole lifetime. If you read a book by Pentecost on Satan, he says Satan attacks you morning to evening, every night, every day, all day long. Well, nuts. That's not true. It says, if I do it right, he's going to flee from me. If he flees from me, he's not attacking me. I get rest, respite. There's rest in the Christian life. Thank God there's more rest than some people think. You see, there's the rest of faith over in Hebrews 4, when your faith espouses the Christ as it should, and you have it there, then you can rest. You're not always fighting. You're not always struggling. You're struggling, you're carnal. That's the struggle of a carnal Christian in the 7th chapter of Romans, and that's what they misunderstand. I've read so many books where the whole Christian life is a struggle. Thank God that's not true. That's just not true. There's place of peace and victory and no struggle. I know. It's not because I'm dead yet either. All right? I know. So don't let them tell you that. That comes from Reformed theology. All Reformed theologians struggle into heaven. They should, because most of them aren't going to make it anyway. All right? Now, he goes on to say, and having done all to stand. Now, you see, you can stand against Satan, but maybe sometimes you have to stand again. It's one of those cases where maybe you have to go back and start putting it on again. But not always. Not always. Now he says, stand therefore. Now you're standing in the power of God. Stand therefore, having your loins girded about with truth. Now that's where you start. Truth. Now remember what truth is? It's seeing things as they actually are. Living up to your estimate of what you think you should be. Right? This is where you determine whether this is really attack to Satan or you've just eaten a hard-boiled egg at the wrong time with mustard on it. See? You're seeing things as it really as they really are. You're seeing things and your relationship to it as it really is. Now, you see, when this is true, now, your loins girded about with truth, it's obviously, he's talking about your loins. They always go into a lot of description here of a Roman soldier. Paul probably looked at a Roman soldier, but he's not talking about the Roman soldier's armor. He's talking about an armor from God, not from the Roman government. So you don't need to really know what all these pieces are in relationship to a human Roman soldier. It's what you're doing in your mind. It's like the Roman soldier would gird about his loins with a strip that would keep everything tied down, tidy. You start off with truth. And you see what you really are. You see what this really is. You see? And your relationship. So there's no nonsense here. In other words, you can see whether you're spiritual or not. Now, if I said that in the average church, they'd flip their lid because they think if you say you're spiritual, then you're not. If you don't know whether you're spiritual, who in the world does? You see? If you're not humble and know you're humble, who in the world knows you're humble? But there's some people say if you're humble, then you're proud. Isn't that the idiotic statement? But that's the average hoi polloi of their statements. All right? So you've got to put on truth first. You see what your recondition really is and what this situation really is. All right, now, it would be very difficult for Satan to put in your thought the idea to lie or to tattle here, wouldn't it? Because lying isn't what things really are. And tattling is not really what things really are. See? And so if you put truth on, it would dislodge, if it was there, or keep from putting there any thought of lying or telling tales that may be true or may not, especially once you've stretched them a little in telling. See? It's important to see what truth is. Here's where you determine whether it really is an attack from Satan. If you really are up to it, if you really have met God's condition, if you really are spiritual, if you really have been empowered with power from God that you need in this place. And so, truth, seeing things as they really are, and measuring up to your opinion of what you should be in relationship to that truth. And it would be impossible for Satan to put in your mind and you to keep there, or for him to put in your mind the idea of lying, the idea of tattling. Now, this will be on your chart next time. It's really important. But now if you stop here, you see, you say, hey, now he can't make me lie. Now he can't. And you stop here. Well, you see, you're vulnerable to all these other positions. All right? And so this is what he tells you. Now notice, so you have an indication here that Satan does continue the attack and change the position, because look down, we're not going to explain it, but if you look down, you'll notice he says that after you've done everything else, you put in the 16th verse, above all, in all, taking up the shield of the faith, then by which you're able to render ineffective, the word quench here means render ineffective the darts of the evil one. You see, now darts, you don't always aim for the same place when you shoot a fire arrow. You've seen these cowboy and Indian, this is a dart, fiery dart, one has pitch on the end. You've seen these cowboy and Indian movies where the Indians don't always shoot the same place. One will shoot the arrow in the window, and one will shoot it at the roof to start the place on fire, and one will shoot at the back door so the door starts burning so they can't come out. You know, they were smart. Well, Satan doesn't shoot the darts the same place. So there is a possibility of him changing positions, changing places. So once you put on truth, and don't hurry it. Don't hurry it. You see, as long as your mind is involved with this, then obviously, even if Satan is attacking you other places, until your mind catches up with that, it's not going to have any effect on you. So take your time. This is where people get in a hurry. Oh, well, I know where I am. I know where this is. Yeah, zoom! And I found that that's the worst thing in the world, is haste, isn't it? As I said, I know a man says that he can put on the armor in 20 seconds, and I've seen some results of that, and that he's succumbed to some of Satan's attacks without even realizing it. And don't hurry it. Make sure that you see things as they really are. You see your relationship. You are sure that you've entered in at the 10th verse, that you, by your position in the Lord, you have you're empowered, and that on top of that, because you're living empowered in your position in the Lord, you have an indubitable strength from His manifest power. And that you're sure. This, so you take that. Now the loins, obviously, would be where he would tie up something around to hold everything else together. That's not important. He's not telling you what the Roman soldier did. He's telling you what you are to do. And notice something else. You don't do this except the evil day. Do you see it? You don't put on the armor every day that you get up. Now, I got some tapes from John MacArthur. And every day, every morning you get up, you put on the armor. Well, my goodness. You put it on before breakfast, it isn't going to do you any good by dinner, remember? And it's silly. I've got some others that say you put it on once for all. There's some errors here. All it means is do it as a completed act. But it doesn't mean that you don't redo it. Peter ate in the aorist tense in Acts 11. Now, don't tell me that Peter didn't eat again. I know Peter. He ate every chance he got. But he didn't eat that meal again. That was a final act of eating, that meal. But he ate some other meals. So these aorist tense don't mean once for all. They mean it's a completed act at this time. But you must do it again and again every time the evil day comes around. So you have those problems that some have foisted on it. I think of all the commentaries I've read, most of them lean to the fact you put on the armor once for all, and usually they put it at the point of salvation, and then you're immune from then on. Well, that's obviously not true. If you put on the armor the day you got saved, then Satan shouldn't have any effect on you from that point on, because remember, this armor is to resist Satan, and when you resist Satan, what happens? He flees from you. He gives up on you. Well, that's obviously not true. So these errors in here are simply, you do it as a completed act at that time before you go on to the next completed act at that time and the next completed act at that time. But you do it every time the evil day comes around. Just like Peter ate in the aorist tense, but next morning he ate breakfast. Well, I know Peter. He never gave up a meal that he could eat. All right? And so he did. So the aorist doesn't mean once for all unless the context bears that. It just means a completed act, a punctiliar act, completed at that point. But it doesn't mean it's not repeated. In fact, you have a nomic aorist, which is repeated many, 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 many times. All right? So, yeah. Now then, the next thing then is the breastplate. of righteousness. Now, if you read Ironside, you read most commentaries, they'll argue whether this is positional righteousness or practical righteousness. And most of them will come out practical righteousness. Now, that's silly, isn't it? Because that's the very test right now. Right now, the test is, are you going to act right or are you not going to act right? Isn't that right? Well, are you going to give in to Satan and act wrong, or are you going to resist him and act right? That's the whole thing here. So it's sort of nonsense to make it practical righteousness, because then you can stop right here. You're going to act righteous. Okay? So this is positional righteousness. And what you're doing is you're reminding yourself, you're in your own mind, you're saying that any righteousness you have has come from God. Any righteousness you'll have in the future comes from God. It's given to you. There's nothing you did for it. You were dependent upon Him for it, and that it was given to you by Him. Now, obviously, if you take that attitude, you can't be proud. You see, if Satan tries to put a thought in your mind to be proud, how can you be proud when you say, in essence, you're saying, all that I am and all I'll ever be is from God? Now, let's see you be proud when you say that. See? All right. How in the world could you ever think of independent of God? Act of independence. All I am and all I'll ever be is from God. It'd be very impossible here for Satan, had he put the thought, or to put a thought of independence in your mind, acting independent of God, or to be proud. And so this part of the armor resists those two parts. And so if he shifted his attack from the other to this, you've already got on this part so that it makes that null and void. So this is not practical righteousness. That's the outcome of putting on the whole armor. Then you're going to act right. This is positional righteousness. This is righteousness before God. You know, practical righteousness is before men. And that's where I'll act if I put on the whole armor and beat Satan. Then I'll act practically righteous. All right? So that's silly, but I would say 95% of the commentaries would end up telling you, act right. Practical right. Well, that's the whole thing, but you've got to put on the whole armor before you act right, don't you? If act right stops here, then I can stop right here. I don't need to put on the rest of it. No, this is think right. And think right about how you're right with God. And boy, you do that. Pride, boy, you couldn't have a millionth of an ounce of pride if you realize that all your righteousness, anything acceptable before God, came by grace. You didn't deserve it. You didn't do it. You can't be proud, so you can't be independent either. If I didn't get it by myself, I was dependent upon God for it. How in the world can I act independent of God? You see? And it's thoughts. It's in the mind. That's where you act from. That's what motivates your will. All right, so if I put on the whole armor, then I'll act right, and men will see me acting right, then I'll have practical righteousness. But this isn't practical righteousness. That's silly. But that's amazing. Even Ironside didn't catch it, and he usually catches things like that. All right, so here we've knocked out now four of the 14 things that Satan causes. We've knocked out lying and tattling and tail-bearing, and we've knocked out pride, and we've knocked out independence of God, you see? Right. But there's still 10 more there, so better not stop. He's still got some darts. He's not going to shoot in the same place. If he does, he's silly. Brad shoots an arrow, he doesn't always shoot in the same place. Even if he wanted to, he wouldn't want to do it.